This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hello there, Peabody here. And this is the Wayback Machine for traveling through time. And this is my boy, Sherman. Speak, Sherman.
Hello.
Good boy.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and you may have heard of ETFs, but have you heard of ETFs gone wild? Today, to talk about the new thing in trading, we welcome the head of managed accounts at Fidelity Investments, Rich Compson. In our headlines, we'll dive into the world of personal finance influencers. Plus, we'll throw out the Haven Lifeline to Annalise, who's wondering about how to decide who gets to be her 401k beneficiary. I'm assuming to leverage for more breakfast in bed. And then we'll check out my hot new trivia. And now, two guys who were helping you stack Benjamins before it was cool, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe Salcii, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And across the card table from me, the guy helping you bring it home, like helping the old lady cross the street or whatever. It's Mr. OG. Oh,
it was like, that was like listening to you trip and fall across the street.
I think I did. I think I got ran over halfway through that sentence. How are you?
What's happening?
You know,
I don't even know how to reply. So what's happening?
We're going to talk about the new thing. OG, remember when you began as a financial planner and ETFs were the new thing?
I do. Yes.
Well, now Rich Compson from Fidelity is here to talk about, is direct investing the new thing? Doug thinks this Speedo apparently that he's wearing at the table is the new thing. And I'm saying it's not. I think it's not.
Summertime. You come from the pool to record a podcast. That's just how we roll.
We've got that. We've got a great headline. So let's get moving. But first, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. It's Military Appreciation Month, and I want to share appreciation for one of our stackers I met in Cleveland for the second time. Keith. Keith just drove his car off the road. But Keith, a proud military member, I enjoyed seeing Keith. And you know what? Eric was there too, who was in the Marines, but both of these fine gentlemen served our country that I met in Cleveland. I want to give a shout out to them. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just Keith and Eric, but all their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. They offer 24/7 help from their U.S.-based member service centers. They offer resources like Best Cities After Service to help veterans transition to civilian life and Best Careers for Military Spouses to support our military families. All branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families are eligible for Navy Federal membership. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate this month, and you'll see all of our Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. All right, Rich Compson from Fidelity Investments is here talking about the new thing. Is direct investing the new thing? We're about to hear about it, so let's roll.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our headline today, guys, comes from Investment News. This is written by Joanne Cleaver. Isn't Joanne Cleaver Beaver Cleaver's mom? Are we now? We're way too old. Now we're like 1950s, right?
That's getting there. Yep.
We are way, way ahead of our skis. This is a piece of Investment News. Why Finfluencers? You guys ever heard that term, Finfluencer? Finfluencers.
The Finturn says it about himself all the time.
Well, he definitely is a Finfluencer. Why Finfluencers, financial influencers, especially resonate with women and minorities? This is what caught me here. It wasn't actually the piece, because I think it's interesting and great that we're bringing people to the table that often feel left out. What I find disturbing is what I see in financial media a lot now, which is style often trumps substance, Joanne writes. For personal finance commentators on social media platforms, though some are blending the best of digital and traditional advice. I love the idea, OG, of combining maybe some humor, maybe some pretty pictures, maybe some good stuff. But here's what I don't like. Listener just sent this to me. This is what I'm seeing when we talk about style trump substance. Check this out.
Something that seems illegal, but really isn't. I'll go first. Did you know you can pay your kids up to $12,200 per year, income tax-free? As long as they're doing something business-related, whether it's data entry, managing your social media, or even modeling for your marketing. And maybe some of you knew that, but did you know this?
So far, by the way, seems pretty good, doesn't it, OG?
Yeah, I mean, there's an asterisk there, but yeah, okay, it's factual.
Find a job for your kids to do. Seems like it should be illegal, but it's not. It's not illegal. I mean, there, to your point, some asterisks, some things that you probably should do. So, mm-hmm. So far we're halfway through the video. I'm loving it. By the way, this has a ton of views. This has come up in my feed, this same video, 4 different times now. This video has a ton of views.
You should stop hitting refresh on it.
I probably should. Yeah. But let's listen to the second half of this.
Place that same $12,200 inside a compound interest account each year and let it grow tax-free while participating in some of the highs of the market without any of the lows because of a 0% floor.
Some of the highs.
It's true. It's called an indexed universal life insurance policy, and I have one for each one of my 6 kids. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you create generational wealth. Oh, and just a side note, you can stop contributing by the age 18 and they'll still retire with $1 million.
Hey, what's cool is... This is how I create intergenerational wealth, OG, for me on the commissions on this product. I am
going to retire in style if I can get a lot of people to buy this from me.
This is what makes me angry. When I read something about women and minorities loving the fact that Finfluencers are online and they're attracted, that's a good thing, right? We're bringing more people to the table, but then we bring them to the table and we feed them garbage, just absolute garbage like this.
Well, I guess we know that Stacking Benjamins will still exist long into the future to combat the idiocy of this nonsense.
Because we're the truth tellers.
Well, I mean, I'd like to think so. I mean, I
hope so.
One of us is.
I hope so. That's kind of the only reason I do this crap with you two idiots is to preach the good news. I mean, it's super frustrating. And then you layer on top of this. I know we talked about this probably a month ago, but then you layer on top of it the compliance associated with it, and you've got zero compliance for insurance salespeople, or almost nothing, and you've got insane compliance for brokers, you know, because they kind of manage to the lowest common denominator. And then you've got investment advisory firms that are kind of in the middle that run their own compliance, but are still so you know, gun shy because of the fact that you hear about stories of things where people put the wrong stuff down or said the wrong thing. And all of a sudden, you know, it's a $800,000 fine by the SEC. So where do you land on that in terms of trying to do the right thing, trying to combat that? If you watch that and you think that that's baloney, like I do, you know, how do we fight that within the rules? And then also with, you know, with the fact that at running Stacking Benjamins for you, Joe, is a full-time job. For you, Doug, it's a something less than a full-time job.
Interruption to my nap time.
Interruption to nap time. You know, and then we've got the planning firm that we do. So, I mean, where do you stuff all of that and combat the guy or the gal, in this case, the guy who's got however many millions of views?
And that's what's scary. More and more people are turning to these channels, these great video channels for their financial advice and for the
compound
truth.
Compound interest account. Dang it. I wish I would have thought of something creative like that. I'm going to call it the tax-free compound money account, TM. Tax-free compound money account, TM.
TM.
I trademark tax-free money compound money growing account. Basically a Roth. Don't tell anybody.
TFTTCMI.
Yes.
TM.
It's a Roth IRA. TM.
I'm kicking myself right now for not forwarding you a reel I saw last night as I got sucked into the black hole of doom scrolling. But the other thing that seems to be happening in reels everywhere, but also I'm noticing in the financial world, is people are making a reel of just, it's them filming themselves reacting to another video. So it's like a split screen and you'll have,
yeah,
and you'll have the person saying like the original content. And then they're just sitting there nodding their heads or making facial expressions and reacting to stuff. And last night I saw this one of, it was a woman filming herself watching a guy on stage talking about whole life insurance policies and how then you can get income from, probably got the wrong product, but his whole stance on it was the government doesn't want you to know about this because all of the income you get from it is 100% tax-free. And the reason they have such strict laws about advertising those products is because if everybody bought them, they'd have no more tax income to fund their programs. And she's just on the side nodding her head. Her neck's about to break. She's nodding so vigorously.
Oh, this is
like,
so
this
amazing.
Is the government trying to F you, man. And there's this guy on stage. I don't know who he was pitching
Little
to.
Little do you guys know, I found this one thing.
Yeah.
Just me and you.
Yep.
And I'm going to share it with just you. And
I was mad on four different levels watching that thing. And why I didn't send that to you guys, I don't know. Because there's a whole episode right there.
That's funny, Doug, because as you say that, as I was watching this video, and let's play the beginning again.
What's something that seems illegal, but really isn't? I'll go first.
I was going to say... I was thinking that I would make a video where this guy starts off saying that what's something illegal, what's something that should be illegal, but isn't it? And I'm going to stop it and go, this video should be illegal and it's not.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Do it.
Cause it sounds, why wouldn't you? So good. Yeah. We'll do the side by side. And then me, Doug, like right. Nodding, you know, shaking my head. No.
And then we'll redo it. We'll split the screen again and I'll have me watching you, watching him, and I'm reacting.
Oh boy.
And then we'll just keep on. Yeah.
Yeah. And Doug, if we get three other people to watch, then you and I will no longer have to watch the guy. Then we sit back with our feet up.
That's right.
And the just money pours the money in.
You just have to get three friends. And who doesn't like TikTok?
The videos all get made. Let's talk about this bad because I was realized is, you know, we're talking about this Joker here, to put it nicely. Some people might not know, OG, why what he's talking about is bad. Paying your kids to do legitimate work is legal. He is right there.
Yeah. I mean, firstly, you need to own a business. There's no benefit for you to pay your kids. I mean, I guess maybe you could finagle it somehow, but you need to be a business owner. So if you're not a business owner, do not pass go. It's like you're done with this conversation. But what he's talking about is if you're a business owner and you own a printing shop, you can employ your kids. You can employ anybody. You can employ your neighbor's kids if you want. You can employ old people, young people. It doesn't even matter, right? So the game that he's talking about is saying, well, are your kids really doing $12,000 worth of work? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Let's maybe they're doing like 6,000 worth of work, but you can kind of juice it a little bit to 12,000 and wink, wink, nudge, nudge. The IRS is none the wiser. So that's what I meant about the asterisk. You can pay your kids. You can pay anybody to do anything as long as it's like legitimate work with a legitimate price, right? You're not going to pay your kids $1,500 an hour to take the trash out. That's not a normal hourly rate for janitorial services. You're not going to pay your kids. He says, you know, use your kids for modeling for your social media, for your business. Okay. But you've got to have an idea of what that actual cost would be to go hire a model to do it. You know what I mean? And it's got to be in the somewhere in the same ballpark.
Yeah. And to your point, OG, $12,000 a kid. He says he's doing it for six of his kids. He's paying his kids allegedly $72,000.
Right. And they have to be over the age of seven. That's the IRS. IRS has said, if you're under seven, you're really not able to do actual work. I mean, just think about it. If you're doing, you know, what's a good hourly rate for a minor? I don't even have any idea. $10 an hour, $20 an hour, probably somewhere in there.
It's a lot of work.
How many hours are you working in order to make 12 grand if you're paying your kid $10 an hour, you know, and you need to make sure that you have it documented. And, you know, again, if it's somewhere in the ballpark, your kid's 15 and doing your social media content, like, okay, that checks, right? Like that kind of sort of makes sense. If you say my 7-year-old is taking the trash out and, you know, emptying the trash cans and filling up staplers at $10 an hour, you know, it's like, how many staplers do you have? You know, how many trash cans do you have in your business? Like you'd have to work 1200 hours. That's half time to be able to pull that off, right? Doug's frowning.
No, I'm not at all. That's my RBF. But no, I'm just thinking about like, how about $10 a tooth from the tooth fairy? I feel like the IRS needs to step in on that too, because that's horse.
Turns out we had deflation in the tooth fairy land the other, at our house.
Nice. Thank you.
Because when
your daughter lost a tooth just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, two, as a matter of fact. For whatever reason, the wife went in the wallet and I had 20s and twos. So she decided on the two. And I'm like, you didn't give two twos? She's like, no, just one. I'm like, yes.
Yes, exactly. That's a good wife right there.
We set the bar for everybody else. We're back down to twos now, just so everybody knows. It used to be quarters, obviously, and then it was fives. And now it's back down to twos. But anyways, so back to this dude here. So paying your kids legitimate, but you know, you got to keep good records. Is it worth getting in trouble with the IRS over the fact that, you know, you don't keep good records? And then
the second half of that, OG.
Yeah. So then he talks about buying life insurance for your kids with cash value. It's like, why do you need life insurance if you have an obligation to pay some sort of expenses if you get hit by a bus, right? I have life insurance because I have a mortgage. I've got kids that I need to send to college. I've got employees that, you know, need to be taken care of. So I have life insurance. If you don't have a mortgage or you don't have a family to take care of financially, what's the point of having life insurance? There's no benefit. And you can say, well, there's no cost. You know, the cost is really low to buy life insurance for a 10-year-old. Yeah, but it's still a cost. Yes, there's still some cost associated with it. So why would you not have the zero cost option and put the money in a Roth IRA? That doesn't cost anything.
Is there any advantage? I'm just trying to find a small light at the end of it, because I agree with you. This sounds totally like the right approach. You shouldn't make money off of your child's death, right? Other than paying for maybe burial expenses. But is there any
there's nothing wrong with that either. I mean, like if you... You know,
there's nothing wrong with making money off your kid dying.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean,
it's like, wow, if you're that got dark in a hurry.
What if your kid is a superstar of some kind? You know, then there's some obligation there, right? It's like, well, it's more likely that they get injured than die.
Right. But my question on the end of that was going to be, is there any advantage to getting them a policy when it is, you know, when they don't have all of the health implications or complications they might have when they're 30? Like, could you, by getting them a policy early and then can you transfer it to them so that then they take over when they become young adults and now they have a policy at a really low premium? Or is that not even a thing you can do with life insurance?
No, I mean, that's a sales strategy, but it's completely BS, because how much life insurance do you think you need at, you said 30, I'll say 40. If you're a mid-career professional with two kids and a big mortgage, millions of dollars. It's a big number. can you buy millions of dollars of life insurance for your 10-year-old? No, the insurance company will not let you. So the whole idea of like, well, I'll just get it now because, or the sales side of it of saying, well, just get it now in case something bad happens, they'll have some insurance. And then they'll be like, it won't be a lot, but it'll be something. It will be nothing. If you add up like inflation over the next 30 years and go, well, I got my kid this $25,000 policy. So at least they get that. At least they have that. It's nothing. It's $0 in the rounding error.
Okay. Is there a product available where you buy it for a 10-year-old at $25K and then they can, now they're in, and then they, when they want to take it over, can they up the amount and still have it at a lower cost than if they were to start fresh as a 30 or 40-year-old?
No, because all insurance is priced based on age and
risk factors
and the benefit, the probability. So if you have the $25,000 one, and again, this is the, like, you've already got it, you can increase it later if you provide insurability, right? So they're going to just reprice it and say, oh, well, now you're 25 and you want $1 million. Sure, let's take your blood and height and weight and your analysis. And, oh, okay, yeah, here's how much it will cost.
You're starting over.
And it's also a big, giant, you know, it's just a scare tactic to say, well, what if your kid can't get life insurance? I mean, it's so rare. I mean, it happens. And you can, I'm certain that there's somebody that can go, well, that happened to my family. Like, okay, it's true. It happens, but it's very rare. So it's just a conny sales thing to say. And then notwithstanding the fact that you don't need life insurance, it has some costs associated with it. And then the third thing is that the money that gets invested here does not grow like market rates. It just simply can't.
Yeah. And that's where, OG, I think this guy's lying is when he says, hey, you get the stock market upside, but there's a floor. You never lose money. What people don't realize is how much you pay for that floor.
Yeah, you pay in upside. That's what happens. If you take away all the risk associated with any sort of investment, there cannot be the same. It just has to make sense to you in your soul that if you take away risk, you cannot have the same upside. You cannot have the same return without having the same risk product to product. It just does not exist in the universe. Otherwise, legitimately, everyone and their brother would do it.
Bernie Madoff figured it out.
Yeah, exactly. So you just can't, you know, it just has to sort of be intuitive to you that if you take away all the downside, you also must be taking away upside. And in this case, what happens is you say, well, you're not going to have any zeros or anything worse than a zero. And you get the upside of the market, asterisk, up to a certain percentage of the market. Most of these are 25% of the market returns. So the market grows at 10, you get 2.5. Market grows at 20, and also they cap it. So it'll be like upside of 25% up to 3%. So market grows at 30, you don't get 30, you don't get 25% of 30, you get 3 because that's the cap. Effectively, it works out to be much more of a fixed income asset class than an equity asset class. And so all of the assumptions that people use of like, I'm going to grow this money tax-free, you know, yada, yada, yada at 10% and ha, 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 I never have any negatives. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to slay it. You know, it's just completely wrong. And then when you go to take the money out, yeah, it's tax-free because it's a loan, just like going to your house and saying, I'm going to get tax-free money out of my house. So you loan it back to yourself, which again, affects the death benefit, which is the reason you'd have the stupid life insurance to begin with is because of the death benefit. And so now you've cratered that cash value, you're going to have to start paying premiums again later in life. So there's a time and a place for permanent life insurance. This, you know, on your kids is not one of them ever, 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 ever. I will die on that hill.
It's funny, Ojeek, because I've seen people buy insurance on their kids, responsible people. And these are people that are pretty smart. They're just very, very, very conservative. And I think, okay, there might be worse things you can do with your money, but I'm with you. I'm still not a fan of it.
If you choose to do it because that's what you choose to do because of whatever reason, hey, that's on you.
There it is.
But if you get schnookered into doing it because you believe that this thing is some kind of like double secret thing the IRS doesn't want you to know about, and if they wrote it down, then everyone would do it and the government would collapse so they don't tell anybody, but I'm the one that knows. That person has a special place in hell.
Absolutely. If anybody ever buys a product at all that is based on the government doesn't want you to know this, like if that is the sales pitch that you fall for, you need something.
Tax tricks. The government doesn't want you to know. Hey, knucklehead, who do you think put the tax tricks into the law? It is the people in the government who wrote it. So they, in fact, already know. And the reason they're there is because the Congress people like to use them, too.
Are you saying I shouldn't have bought those UFO videos? They didn't want me to know about those either.
Yeah, they're going to be knocking on the door now, Doug. Now that you let it fly, that you actually have those
FBI
videos.
FBI raid coming your way.
Here they come. Is this Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, house? We need to confiscate your VCR.
Swarm.
It's not even VCR. We need to confiscate your reel-to-reel.
Is that audio?
Doug's only? Got like the last reel-to-reel tapes.
Reel-to-reel audio only?
No, what's the little film strips that, you know.
8mm? The Zapruder film? I got a copy of the Zapruder film.
That's it. That's where he not only has UFOs, he has Bigfoot as well. Yeah. Might as well take all of them. So depressing. I feel like the responsible people in the industry not keeping up. I love the headline that people are attracted to more of the new media, but the new media comes with this big downside that you have clowns like this person. Very frustrating. We will link to this video on our show notes page so you can take a look if you want to see this guy spewing garbage. I don't know if we should link to it, but we will. By the way, thanks to Alan for sending that our way, saying, hey, sounded good. He sent me this message going, sounds good till you get halfway through. And Alan, I totally agree. Coming up next, man, there was a time, OG, back in the 1940s when mutual funds were the new thing. It was pretty cool that the average investor could do what big investors have known for a long time, which is they can diversify their investments. And of course, then the mutual fund industry grew out of that. Then exchange traded funds, as we had Robin Wigglesworth on earlier this spring, talking about the advent and the creation of exchange traded funds. Exciting there. Now, because of zero cost, Fidelity Investments exploring direct trading, and they're not the only ones. Can you have a mutual fund without actually buying the mutual fund? Can you get diversification? And it's personalized and not just a separate account with a manager attached. We'll talk to Fidelity Investments about that. But first, to get there, Doug, I think you got some trivia for us.
Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. You already know if you want the heads up on the new thing, I'm your guy. Sure, I'm late on a couple of trends, but I'm also stubborn, so I hang in there till it comes back. I got my bell bottoms on right now. Joe and OG are always talking about creating a plan and sticking to it. I am sticking to the plan I made in 1982. It's like Yacht Rock. Oh, I've got the rock. Now all I need is that f***ing yacht. Today, coming in during 1982 is the birthday of our writer, Paulette Perhatch. And since she writes the show, I guess I have to pretend I wanted to talk about it. It's also the birthday of her twin, supermodel Gisele Bündchen. While Paulette has been one of the lowest paid podcast writers in the world, Gisele has been the highest paid model on the globe for 14 years running, according to People magazine. Gisele is married to Tom Brady, pretty much the most successful quarterback in the history of the NFL, who's won 7 Super Bowls. So my question is, who earns more, Gisele or Tom Brady? I'll be back with the answer after I Google some photos of this Gisele. You know, his research.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they can also be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. Oh, God. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right. U.S. Cellular, a company that sells phones, wants us to put down our phones and to see what we find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about
how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Stackers, I'm top earning model airplane mogul and football super nacho champ, Joe's mom's neighbor Doug. Much like Paulette plus seven decimal places, Giselle and Tom Brady have a combined net worth of $650 million, according to SportsSkeeda.com. Great research, Paulette. Turns out, for all the practice, all the running, all the throwing, all the hits taken, who are we kidding? Nobody lets them hit Tom Brady. Tom Brady has a measly $250 million. That means his wife, for all the modeling, as well as beauty, fragrance, publishing, and clothing deals, is worth an estimated $400 million. So who's worth more? Giselle. You hate to see a woman like that with a deadbeat mooch like Brady. Jeez. And now, we have someone who's here to help you make supermodel money, Rich Compson from Fidelity Investments.
And Rich Compson from Fidelity Investments joins us. How are you, man?
It's great. Can't beat it. Great summer so far.
Oh, isn't it fantastic? It's a time when I think about investing more and being outdoors.
Exactly. And I know the markets are a little scary right now, but hopefully we're going to turn that corner.
Just tell me that's a prediction, Rich, and it's going to be next week. Just let me know that.
I hope that for all of us.
I know that's two of us, right? Well, let's dive into a little history so we can get to the future, because I'm really excited about this discussion of where the future of money management is headed, where the future of investing might be headed. So we started off, you know, the 1940s rolls around and we see mutual funds really come stage center. And this is really cool because the average person can now do what rich people have known for a long period of time, right? I can diversify and get rid of a lot of risk. Tell me a little bit about mutual funds though, and why then the move that we're seeing today, so many people moving toward the next stage, which was really exchange traded funds.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about mutual funds, it allowed the average investor just to get broad exposure to the market. It would have been very challenging to do that otherwise, because if you think about the average price of a stock and some of the more expensive stocks out there, if you had $5,000 to invest, it would be very difficult to build a diversified portfolio. By putting that into a pooled vehicle, you're now able to access multiple different stocks and diversify yourself. So that was a big win in just your basic mutual fund. And then if you think about ETFs, mutual funds, you'd buy them once a day and you could invest for the long term. But if you really wanted to buy during the day or have a smaller slice of the market, ETFs really allowed you to trade that real time when you wanted to buy. So if you're looking at price movement in the market, you could take advantage of that. So there's been that slow evolution.
Yeah, I actually have a couple questions there, because being able to trade during the day, clearly, and I can watch it all day long, but it seems to me partially, Rich, especially when we talk about behavior, like this is a perceived advantage, not so much a real advantage. Like if I can watch my stuff all day and obsess over it and maybe trade it two or three times a day, I might be doing something a little wrong.
I think that's right. And I think if I look at ETFs more broadly, you know, they created little finer slices of markets you could take advantage of. So if you wanted to buy a slice of tech stocks, you could do that. Or if you wanted to buy a slice of industrials, you could. They were able to break down a little bit of these more discrete parts of the market that allowed. So I think that's how most people use them. And we use ETFs in our broad managed account advice products. And it's really about how do we want to get different exposures. And they complement some of the other products we have out there today. So I think for most investors, that's probably the advantage of them.
Mutual funds were nice for the new investor for a long time too, because they introduced this idea, Rich, that you'd have somebody looking over your portfolio, right? You'd have this manager who was taking care of you. And for the average person who would get the news a day late, I mean, I still remember early in my career going to get the Wall Street Journal in the morning to see how we did, you know, yesterday, how things looked. Now we can watch it minute by minute. Are you seeing the need for that person watching the portfolio? Is that need decreasing or is it still around or does it depend on really what your goals are?
I think over the last 10 to 20 years, we've seen a growing need for advice and help. And in part, I think if you look at the broad picture over time, more and more the burden of saving for retirement and other goals has been shifted to the individual. Those are complex things that people are saving for and very important for them. So generally, we've seen that growing demand for advice. And then you couple that with the volatility in the markets that we've seen and how do you manage your way through the volatility in the markets. And we've seen multiple market volatility spikes over the last few years. And on top of that, there's also many more products to choose from. So how do you help the investor sort through the array of products that are out there today?
Which is interesting because I think what you're saying is we saw in the 1940s, advice kind of bundled with a product, but over time with the advent of the exchange traded fund and most of these being indexed, of course, we do have some actively managed products now in the ETF space. But with that, where they're mostly indexes, still having advice, but advice is kind of on the outside, right? Where the product doesn't include that. It might be just an index or a slice, but the nature of those two things has kind of changed, I feel, over time as well.
That's right. There's advice on the individual fund itself, because you're helping someone pick stocks to get that exposure. So if I use that example of, hey, I want to invest in a series of technology stocks, you could have someone helping you select those stocks. But then there's the advice, well, how does that fit into my overall portfolio? Because if I'm saving for retirement, I really wanted to be diversified across a bunch of different asset classes to control volatility in my portfolio or risk in my portfolio. So then there's the advice of, well, how do I put that solution together with other solutions to make sure that I'm really saving correctly for the long term?
Now, the downsides of mutual funds, let's start off, I guess, with taxation, right? I might be buying, if I buy in the end of a bull market, I might be buying somebody else's wins. And then I end up saddled with a bunch of taxes that weren't mine. I think for some people in non-IRA accounts, this might be a problem this year, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is one of the downsides of a mutual fund. Mutual funds in a retirement account are wonderful, right? Because you don't have to worry about some of those tax issues. But you do have to worry about the embedded gains that are in a fund and then realizing those as an investor. I mean, there's strategies to try to mitigate those and avoid some of those, but that's complex and it takes some sophisticated technology to be able to do that. So if you can avoid some of that embedded tax and just not carry that, that's a helpful strategy.
And I know the ETFs are even more efficient, but let's cut to now more modern stuff away from ETFs, because the next thing, and the reason why we wanted to have you on, is because I know back, and I haven't been a financial planner for a long time. It's been, 13, 14 years now since I was. We had some clients on the wealthier end that used something called separately managed accounts, where they had the individual stocks instead of having an ETF or a mutual fund. And the cool thing there, tax-wise, we could do tax loss harvesting. We could pick out certain things inside of there. I think now you guys are part of this wave of bringing this to a bigger mass of people.
That's right. If you thought with a start with a separately managed account, which is basically like a mutual fund, but you hold all the individual stocks yourself, therefore, you don't worry about buying in some of these embedded gains of the fund and what other investors have done. You buy the stock on day one, it's yours, and you step in and that's the cost you've paid for it. And typically those products were reserved for the more wealthy client. And it gets back to that diversification comment. To build a portfolio of 100 stocks or whatever, you had to have a certain amount of wealth to build that portfolio. So hence, separately managed accounts or these individual stock portfolios typically were more wealthy. What's really changed is two things. One is the introduction of fractional shares. And fractional shares, just to simplify it, allows you to buy a part of a stock. So you can pool five investors, they can each buy part of the stock and you each own a part. And that breaks the price down and makes it more affordable for an investor to buy just a slice of a stock, and therefore brings the minimums down for some of these products. So now you can have that diversified portfolio. You can hold 100 stocks, but you may only invest $5,000, but you're still getting that broad diversification. And you also get the benefit of not being in a pooled vehicle where you own that stock directly and you can avoid some of the other tax hurdles that we mentioned before. The other big thing that's been added on is the advancement of technology. to really be able to manage these portfolios to an individual. So how do you take that portfolio and then trade it and keep it balanced? To your point about having a pro sitting on top that's constantly reviewing that portfolio, trading the portfolio, keeping the risk, managing the portfolio, looking for opportunity to do tax loss harvesting and techniques like that. There's sophisticated technology that can look at portfolios every day and really take advantage of movement in the market. So I'd say two things have really happened to be able to democratize these solutions. It's that using a fractional share, so more investors can buy it at a lower price. And then this advent of growing technology that can take a new type of product and bring it out to more customers.
Is this also, when you say the advent of fractional share buying, it seems to me that this all really started when we saw the industry really go to zero fees, right? Go to zero trading fees, kind of made all of this start to happen. Would that be wrong?
I think it's related. Generally, there's been this trend towards how do you make investing more accessible to a broader audience? Lowering fees has happened, lowering minimums across products has happened, and now actually breaking down the products to make them easier to purchase is also happening. I think the other key aspect has just been the growth and use of technology from an investing perspective. I mean, back in the day, it was check an application. It was complicated to invest. Now you can do a lot of these products digitally. The new offering that we're offering, Managed Fidfolios, it's a separate account, but you can actually buy it online, invest online, and do all that as an individual investor without having to go through an advisor. So I think the advent of this growth of technology more broadly and the use of the internet and the web and mobile devices has really enabled this growth.
That's so cool. That's pretty powerful. I can now just jump on my own computer and have my separately managed account. And let's talk about who this is right for and how this works, because I was walking with my spouse, Cheryl, yesterday. I was talking about how excited I was because I love talking about where we're headed next. And I said, but the one thing that confounds me that I hope Rich talks about is now, instead of having an index ETF where I have one line on my Fidelity statement, I now have 300 things on my screen, right? I mean, am I wrong, or how do I manage this perceived complexity?
Yeah. So one of the things that we try to do is reduce the complexity in the investor. So as part of our pitch, we talk about auto everything. And there's a few things that we do for clients to make this more simple so that you get some of the benefits of a pooled mutual fund. I mean, think about the benefits of pooled mutual fund. One, if you want to make a purchase, you automatically spread it. You don't have to worry about spreading it across the stock. So
yeah,
if you buy one, and if you add money to one of these accounts, we automatically diversify you across the accounts. If you need to take money out, we automatically take the money out across the accounts. We try to suppress things like any communications and voting on proxies if you want to. So we'll take care of that. We do things like, to your point, online, where you can see all the holdings or you can roll it up and just see the strategy, just like a fund.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're trying to do a series of things. You have the benefits of having holding the individual securities, but then can look at it on a more simplified basis as needed.
How is this better than, Rich, than owning an ETF? I think I get it, but I don't think that we've really explained it to the stackers out there.
Yeah. So I look at two primary benefits. One of them is around tax management. The way I would simply break that down is if you're holding an ETF, you're holding the whole market. So your ETF fluctuates up and down with the broad basket of securities in the market. So if the market's up 10%, you're up 10%. If you're down 10%, you're down 10%. When you start breaking that basket apart and you hold 100 stocks, there may be 50 that are up and there may be 20 that are down, there 20 are flat. And what you can do is for the ones that are down, you can sell those and capture the tax loss related to that and use that to offset future gains and losses. Where in a pooled vehicle, you don't see those pieces because it's all moving together. And so that's one of the key advantages. And then, you know, you do a technique called tax loss harvesting, which is basically you take and sell those securities, you'll buy in a similar security, so you keep your profile looking the same or your risk the same. Then you have this loss that you can capture and use it to offset against other gains in your portfolio or other tax implications you might have broadly. So tax loss harvesting and that extra tax advantage is key. So obviously, if you're in a taxable registration, that makes a ton of sense. The other key benefit is back to personalization. One of the key things we see is, yes, you might want to invest in all the stocks in the S&P 500, or one of the things we're seeing more and more is people that might have an environmental focus or an ESG focus. and they want to put specific personalization, say, I don't want to hold that stock or I want to avoid that industry or that category. One of the things that's hard to do in a mutual fund, you have to actually create a mutual fund for each one of those categories to be able to exclude them or include them. With this separately managed account or product, you can actually go into the digital experience and say, I want to exclude these categories or industries and invest towards a theme. So it just, by holding the individual stocks more directly, it's much more easy to personalization. So boiling back up, it's about better after tax returns and then also about this greater degree of personalization.
I love that personalization aspect, and I hadn't thought about that at all, Rich. I mean, it seems to me, so on one hand, and I don't want to belittle this by using this as an analogy, and I'll tell everybody ahead of time, this might be a poor analogy, but I remember when I first found out that I could buy Nike running shoes and I could choose my own color and I could put my name on them. And I wore those things so proudly, Rich, because they said me all over them, but it was still backed by a shoe that was wearable that I could do. So you're saying this is a strategy, just like an ETF that I can use. But if there's certain things that I don't want in it, it's very uniquely me.
And to your point, we also put the guardrails on to make sure that the risk and the returns of that portfolio still meet your objectives. Because we don't want you to do something like put your shoes on the wrong feet or wear the wrong size or whatever the right analogy is. But so how do we give you that personalization and then allow you to make sure you're on track? And one of the analogies that I use, whether, again, to your point, whether it's good or bad, is like if you use Waze or a driving application, you often get multiple different routes. As someone that's building products, my goal is to help someone get to their destination. The way to get people to destination is obviously get them on a good route, but sometimes the best route is the one that the customer will stick with and feel vested in. And to me, by offering some of this personalization, it's a way to have the investor have a closer affinity and belief in their portfolio that they're more likely to stick in it, because sometimes the route isn't as important as just staying on track to that destination. So for me, personalization is how do I bring my belief system into this solution to really have that investor connect with it and stay with it over time? Because we all know that that's the game. It's like you need to stay invested for the long term.
It's funny you bring that up, because I'm having a, we'll call it a fight. It's not really a fight, a discussion on Twitter. Believe it or not, we're having a discussion on Twitter where nobody is convincing the other person of anything, which never happens on social media, but about how important it is to just stick to your plan and have a plan that you believe in versus using some rules of thumb that you really don't care about. I'm much more, I think it's so, the behavior piece of this can't be overstated. I want to ask you a question that everybody's yelling at their device about right now. Solutions like this, right, where there's more customization involved. What does the pricing structure look like then in an investment like this versus an exchange traded fund or a mutual fund?
So we're using a basis point fee very similar to what you have in a fund. So if you think about a fund, it's some part of a percent. The fees for this product is 0.4% or 40 basis points in industry vernacular. What we see over time is that most of the benefits from tax management cover all the costs. So, and typically people are getting more benefits from tax management than they're actually paying the expense. So for us, it's how do we return value to the customer? And while this product is new that we're making it digital, we've had it actually out in the market since 2011 for wealth clients, just not using this fractional share technology. And we've seen that historically that 95% of our clients get more tax benefits than they pay in fees. And if you ask about what's the 5%, well, if you happen to buy a portfolio at the very bottom of a market and it shot up and you saw mostly, growth and you didn't see any losses, good for you. Those are the customers that don't have some of those tax benefits, but then you're still getting the exact market returns too. So it's a little bit more expensive than an index fund, but the value you're getting is the tax management. And that's what the additional fees are for.
Last question for you, which is, I'm just imagining the industry heading this way, heading toward more personalization. So I love discussing this. Where do you think we head after this? Like, just put on your, we're watching the Jetsons. It's 1968 or 70, and we're sitting around, well, I'm 2 years old, 1970, but we're watching the Jetsons and we're watching these people talk to each other on television, which was crazy to me at the time. The fact that we'd have this video thing like Zoom that we have every day now. Where do you think we go next? Where's the industry really headed when it comes to innovation?
I'd say in this particular area, in this conversation around direct indexing and buying stocks, I look at this as the potential next generation of the mutual fund and how you can now atomize these products and then make them far more personalized than they were before and really connect investing more closely to people's values and interests with a level of control. So like we talked about the two levels of advice earlier, we talked about how you know, you can have someone help you buy this portfolio of stocks, but then a broad portfolio. In both of those levels, we're also using these products inside of our broad advice products. So if you come to us and you're saving for retirement, we'll build you a portfolio that has a combination of mutual funds and these products. And for taxable accounts and other accounts, this now allows you to personalize your entire portfolio. So if you're saving for retirement, you can apply it across all of your accounts and your assets. So I think as these capabilities continue to become more mature, you'll see more and more of this personalization available. I mean, that doesn't mean they're always in a great place for mutual funds because mutual funds continue to have that simplicity.
Sure, right.
So I think this is a good complement to the investor that's looking for more of that greater personalization and maybe the concern about taxes. So they really go hand in hand. And if you look at our broad portfolios, they're really a combination of both. Then you look at other products that are emerging over time and you see direct indexing around things like crypto and alternatives and other products that if you think about the broad set of asset classes that you can imagine in these solutions over time, how do they adopt some of these similar capabilities and then the digital capabilities as well? So I think we'll see a continued growth to that. And again, to me, the thing that's probably most exciting is the more we can build solutions to your Nike experience that the customer's in love with and more likely to stay with, I think that's a huge positive outcome for the industry over time because investing is challenging and the more you can have an affinity to what you're doing and be closer to what you're doing, I think that's helpful. And some investors are that way today because they're naturally interested, but others maybe less. And how do we help more investors get closer to their portfolios?
Seems to be a great way to leave fewer people behind. At Fidelity, where do I go on the website then to find out more about this specifically, Rich?
If you do a search on Fidelity Direct Indexing or Fidelity Managed Fidfolios, you will find it. There's also a few articles that are out there you will find as well. There's some general education about direct indexing. But if you put in Fidelity Direct Indexing, you'll see both some industry articles as well as our solution. And on our website, if you want to go right to it, you can go to Fidelity and you go under products and manage Fidfolios.
And boom, it's there. And by the way, if you are walking the dog right now, as you're listening to Rich and I, we've got you covered. Go to our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com and we'll have the link there. And of course, in our newsletter, the 201, we'll have some of the deeper links there. Rich, thanks a ton about talking about really, I guess I was going to say the future, but I guess the future's now. The future's now.
Right. The future is here.
Yeah. Thanks a ton, Rich.
Thanks, Joe.
This is Rebecca from Connecticut. Instead of stacking Hamiltons and Jacksons, I'd much rather be stacking Benjamins.
Big thanks to Rich Compson for stopping by. Hey, let's throw out the Haven Life line, OG, and tackle some of life's most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they put what you value first, OG.
Oh, this is the season of barbecue, man. So we got it all going on. You know, eating outside, got little hot dogs, grill, barbecue, brisket, ribs, pulled pork, and your favorite, coleslaw.
Do you cue the vegetables? Do you grill those up as well?
Yeah, there's only a few things I wouldn't throw on there, but I don't like zucchini at all, and everybody in my family does. So they're like, ooh, let's grill up some vegetables. And I'm like, so onions and peppers and mushrooms? Sounds great. They're like, and zucchini. I'm like, no, you can take those and throw them right in the trash. But yeah, corn on the cob. Corn on the cob is really good on the grill.
Yes.
It turns into popcorn if you let it sit there too long.
Oh, does it? Rare fact.
No, it doesn't.
It may not be true. Don't try that at home, people.
Cover it in oil. No. You set up your grill. You just cover it in oil. You shut the lid. Crank it on high.
No.
And party time.
Please, all of our listeners in Indiana, write in to explain to OG why that doesn't work. It's an entirely different piece of corn that would do that.
I don't think so.
Our listeners in Indiana or Iowa could be either or. I love that. Indiana just one big cornfield, Doug.
I've spent some time there, and yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Anything north of Indianapolis, even south, about a couple hours south of Indianapolis, as far as the eye can see, it's just ethanol as far as you can
cornfield.
See.
Cornfield. Well, you asked OG that for a reason. Do you barbecue the vegetables?
Me?
Yes.
No, they keep falling through. I don't know how you get.
Oh, grill pan.
Oh yeah. We've got a grill basket where when we make our zucchini, we invite OG over and have loads of zucchini.
We're having dinner. Would you like to come over for dinner? I get invited over all the time.
I'm like individually placing green beans on the grill to make sure they don't fall through. It's a pain
crosswise.
In the ass.
Yeah,
crosswise. It's just, and then you're flipping them. Come on.
No, you get the big basket. The key is to put the basket on long before you put your vegetables on. You got that thing needs to be like hotter than the hinges of hell. And then you take your vegetables and that makes a noise.
Like a deep fryer. Can we do that on the grill?
Yes. Yes. The grill is very conducive for pouring buckets of oil all over fire.
Sweet. I'm going to.
Do it next to the lake, though, so you can kick the grill into the water if you need to.
I can hear Scott, the UL guy we have on every fall to talk about fire safety, like screaming as he's listening to this. Just screaming.
Basically, Phil, when you're going to deep fry your vegetables, make sure you fill the basket all the way to the top with oil because you don't want any leftovers.
Like the way I do my deep turkey fryer.
Yes.
My deep fryer
for
the turkey.
So it sloshes the oil over the pan onto the fire. That's how you get the flame broiled flavor of metal. On your turkey for Thanksgiving.
Just what you need.
Are we supposed to be doing an ad read right now? Is that
called
what
this the
Burger
King effect? Oh yeah, that's right. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they put what you value first, grilling with your loved ones and your time. And that's why they've made buying quality term life insurance actually simple. You head to stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life now to get a free quote. Their application is simple. It's online. You get instant coverage decision. Prices are affordable. All policies issued by their parent company, Mass Mutual, which is more than 160 years old. Today, we're going to go back to our Facebook group, The Basement. Great question here from Annalise OG. She says, I'm going over my 401k beneficiaries. My work policy states that if I've been married for over a year, I can't designate any portion of my vested account balances to go to any beneficiaries except for my spouse without their written consent. And even if I list someone else, it's not valid. Guess I shouldn't care because I'd like it to go to my spouse, but that seems strange to me. Is this common? That's the question. Annalise, very smart in hiding the fact that she doesn't want to give her husband the money by saying, I really wanted to go there, just asking for a friend.
I prefer it. I'm just, right? A friend asked me.
Yeah. Asking for a friend.
Is this common, OG?
100%. I mean, this goes back to the days where men were the primary earners and would work their 30 years and then go get their pension. And then the company would say, well, do you want the pension to last for your lifetime? And it's $1,000 a month, or do you want it to last for years in your wife's lifetime? And it's 500. And the man would go, just give me the 1,000. And then of course he'd die, 2 months into retirement and leaving his old lady with no money. And so they made it so that you can't disinherit your spouse that way. Or if you're going to try, you need to have them sign off on it.
Let her sign off on it. Yes, he can disinherit me.
Yeah. Yeah. So now the default for qualified plans is your spouse. And not only would require your spouse's signature, but also a notary, usually, to wipe them off of it.
Huh.
Even if you're trying to do something like leave it as a trust beneficiary, which some people would prefer to do, for estate planning purposes, it makes it a little bit more challenging. But yeah, it's kind of sort of for protection for the spouse. But like you said, there's a way to do it. You just have to have somebody sign off on it and get it notarized.
I can remember a couple of employers specifically were always sending out email reminders saying, make sure you designate a beneficiary. Because if you didn't, there was no beneficiary. So they didn't have that automatic thing. That was question number one that I was thinking of as you were saying, this is old as the hills, OG. And the second one was, it seems like the only group that could say, that could enforce sort of the automatic rollover to your spouse, if you didn't say anything, would be like the government, like probate, like a probate court would do that, but not necessarily an insurance company.
Well, it's ERISA who would mandate workplace plans, which I guess, part of the government. And 401ks are not super old. They're only, 1975-ish or so. So It's still relatively new. In, I think, every state, some attorney will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in every state, the default is your spouse. So if you're if your 401k provider was sending out emails going, hey, don't forget to designate a spouse or designate a beneficiary, that was, I suspect, more of a reminder of it's going to be your spouse unless you designate something else.
Okay.
Instead of like, you know, if you get hit by a bus and you haven't designated any beneficiaries of any things, the court will step in and say, well, this obviously goes to your spouse, you know, and that's, I think that's where, you know, regular review from an estate planning standpoint, beneficiary review every couple of years makes a lot of sense because all of these companies are run by people that have computers and sometimes they make mistakes and stuff happens in your life, right? You go, well, my wife doesn't need any money. Her parents just passed away and gave her $17 million. So I would like my money to go to my kids. Yeah, it would be a good day. I mean, not for her parents, obviously, but
everybody wins except the parents.
As long as you're still in good stead, I think you can make out like a bandit in that deal. But, you know, maybe you want to, you know, revisit it because you want to have it go to your kids or your nephews or something instead. And unless you look at your beneficiary designations every so often, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to think about that.
Annalise, thanks for the question. If you've got a question, you can, of course, go to our Facebook group like Annalise did, stackingbenjamins.com/basement gets you directly to the URL that takes you to our group. However, you can also leave us a voicemail, stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail. And if you do leave us a voicemail, you'll receive the Greatest Money Show on Earth, Stacking Benjamins classic t-shirt, which is just fantastic to see people around the country wearing this thing. Oh, gee. Just a very, very...
If they tuned into our YouTube channel and watched us, the video of us recording this, they could see me wearing one of those shirts. Oh, wait, they can't.
Again. Yeah, someday. Doug, it's on the way. It's on the way. The check is in the mail. Just a couple more things here. Number one, speaking of Doug doing the show live, if you want to join us, on our YouTube channel, we got lots more going on there, including for the rest of the summer, we're doing the show live every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. You can join Doug, OG, and our contributors as we make the Friday show live. Go to our YouTube page, subscribe, and hit that little bell that will notify you then when we are going live or when there's new stuff coming up on our page, which we are doing increasingly more and more over on YouTube. But if you're not here for YouTube videos, you're not here to talk about the latest junk on TikTok that this horrible dude made, like we talked about in our headlines, you are here because you really need to put together a better team for your money. OG and his team are taking clients. They can help you think bigger about your money. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/OG for a link to their calendar and to get started on a better path with your money. All right, that's going to do it for today. Doug, I think you got it from here, man. What should we have learned today?
Well, Joe, first, your 401k beneficiaries, check those today to ensure the right people are receiving your hard-earned funds if you can't spend them yourself. Second, the new thing in investing, while the jury is still out on direct investments, the world of money is always changing, so don't get lured into thinking there isn't anything more to know. But the big lesson... it pays to be beautiful. That's why I am all about that skincare. I got my face mask on right now. Got a dermaplaning appointment tomorrow. And then Joe and I are headed to get this thing called a Brazilian. Hey, Joe, what is a Brazilian? It's a massage, right? A pedicure? Please, like hair extensions? Please tell me it's hair extensions. Thanks to Rich Compson of Fidelity for joining us today. You can find out more at fidelity.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2022, and is created by Joe Saul-Sehy. Our producer is Karen Repine. The show is written by the brilliant Paulette Perhatch, with help from Joe, me, and Doc G from the Earn and Invest podcast. After you listen to our show, check out the 201 Deep Dives, written by our website manager and blog editor, Brooke Miller. You'll find the 411 on all things money at the 201. Just go to stackingbenjamins.com/201. Once we bottle up all this goodness, we ship it to our engineer, the amazing Steve Stewart. Steve helps the rest of our team sound nearly as good as I do right now. Want to chat with friends about the show later? Mom's friend Gertrude is our social media coordinator and the room mother in our Facebook group called The Basement. So, say hello when you see us posting online. Here's a weird fact. Both she and Tina Eichenberg are never in the same room at the same time. To join all the basement fun with other stackers, type stackingbenjamins.com/basement. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show. Not only should you not take advice from these dorks, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor.
Don't want the show to be over yet? You want some more big tips? Okay, fine. We'll bring them to you and we can both hang out here a little longer. Thanks to Navy Federal Credit Union, because becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union lets you experience more. From everyday commutes to your next big vacation, the flagship credit card earns you 3 times the points on travel so you can get rewarded for wherever you're headed next. And you already know the stackers, but if you're not paying your bills, your credit card bills off in full, you want to ignore rewards. However, if you are somebody playing the reward program, by the way, you want to listen in on Friday. We're going to dive into rewards even more on Friday. But the Navy Federal flagship credit card, 3 times points on travel, and you can get rewarded for wherever you head next. Plus, the premium travel card has a low annual fee of $49 and 2 times the points on all purchases outside of travel, meaning the rewards don't have to end even when the vacation does. And speaking of rewards, if you are struggling with your automobile and you need a more reliable ride to work and that emergency fund isn't big enough to pay cash for your car, well, Navy Federal Auto Loans will help you with that new car. Applying's easy. You can do it on their mobile app, online, or by phone. And it's so fast, you can get a decision in seconds. They have great rates on auto loans. Plus, with their car buying service powered by TrueCar, you can shop, compare, and get upfront pricing on your next new or used car. You know, over time, this argument's changed. It's been for a long time that used cars made a bunch more sense than new cars. But lately, man, the used car market is so expensive. And I love that TrueCar car buying service has saved me thousands of dollars. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, open to the armed forces, the DOD, veterans, and their families. Flagship rates are variable and range between 10.74% and 18% APR based on creditworthiness. ATM fees for cash advances are up to $1 at non-Navy Federal ATMs. Credit and collateral subject to approval. Message and data rates may apply. Visit NavyFederal.org for more information and to apply.
So my son is, my oldest is 15, and he is, for the first time ever, on a sleepaway camp. That's, I don't know the official terminology, but, you know, like summer camp, basically. And he went with a couple of his buddies. I looked at the agenda. It's a kind of churchy camp. So I looked at the agenda. There's a lot of thinking time and learning, but it's in the mountains. It's in Colorado. So, you know, I mean, you got to sprinkle in some cool stuff like hiking and, you know, I don't know what the heck they're going to do.
Microbreweries. Fly fishing.
Yeah, exactly. Not my cup of tea as it relates to the trip. So that's why I'm not at it. Also, I wasn't asked. So that worked out really good in my favor. So they left Dallas. So the trip was leave Dallas in a bus, at 9:50 at night to arrive in Estes Park sometime in the late afternoon the next day. So they could like optimize the time there. I was like, hey, I know Jesus.
This sounds like the way Joe travels.
Nothing
better than a bunch of super tired teenagers in the afternoon. That sounds optimal to me.
Yes. So here's the text messages. So I'm like, hey, man, have a good night. I'm going to bed. When I wake up, hopefully you guys will be in Colorado. Safe travels. Let me know if you need anything. Okay, thanks. Like, if you have a teenager, you know how like text message replies are generally like, yeah. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
Hopefully you wake up. Hopefully. Have fun. I've got, we were talking about video games. I'm going to play his video games while he's gone. So then at 7:40 Monday morning, hey, I see you stopped for breakfast. 8:40. Good morning. And then he writes back. Good morning. We ate at McDonald's. I will never take my bed for granted. Ever. I could barely get any sleep on the bus. We got like 5 hours. I wrote, oh, okay. Well, sleep when you can. Yup. So then Monday afternoon or evening, he texts, good night. Cannot text anymore. So he texts a couple pictures and some beautiful pictures of Colorado and Estes Park. Here are some pictures. So it's like three pictures. One was hailing, by the way. He's like, oh yeah. And it's hailing. So he's definitely. So then this morning he sends a whole bunch of pictures early this morning. And I'm like, at like 6:30 in the morning, he's sending the, like, what's this, 5:30? Holy cow. And it's like, you know, pictures of the sunrise. So I wrote and I said, oh man, this is awesome. It's cool and all, but we had to wake up at 4:30. And basically it's a leg workout. The picture was on top of the mountain we climbed. I go, hey, I hope you're having fun. It's a pretty cool view. Yeah, but we're all really tired now and it's just the start of the day. It sounds like he's having a hell of a time. It's cool. Like, yeah. I saw the sunrise from the top of a mountain. It's cool and all, but it was like basically a leg workout at 4:30 in the morning. So now I'm all tired.
Did you enlist him? He gets an all night bike ride.
Bus ride. Yeah.
all night bus ride. And they're waking him up at 4:30 for a hike.
Yeah.
I think your kid's in the Marines now.
He's going to air quote camp, Doug. Air quote camp.
Yeah. Dad, why am I wearing camouflage?
That's right. Yeah, remember in the 1950s, none of us remember this, but they used to make these novelty songs, you know, and they actually hit it big on the radio. This reminds me of one of those old novelty songs, the trip that your kid is on.
Hello, mother. Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining. And they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining. I went hiking with Joe Spivey. He developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner. He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner.
And it goes on and on about how great camp is. And I thought about that entire story.
Yeah.
Just how living the dream, man.
Yep.
I will never take my bed for granted again, Dad.
Ever. There's a period and then the word ever in capitalized. Yeah. It was, I love having my kids have experiences.
Well, this show's over, Stackers, but you know what? It's Military Appreciation Month, and that means that we've got time still for a shout-out to members of our community, members of our family who have served our country. And you know what? Today, I want to give a shout-out to two of my uncles, my Uncle Henry, who was in the Army. Let's do three. My Uncle Eddie, who was in the Army, and my Uncle Bill, also in the Army. And two of them served in Vietnam. One served in Korea. And a big thanks to all three of my uncles, my dad's brothers who served like he did in the military. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just my uncles, but they want to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Of course, you may be eligible for Navy Federal membership and you don't even know it because it's open to all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families. They're all eligible, and I want to reiterate, and their families. If you have family, like I do, who served in the military, well, then you're eligible for Navy Federal membership. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve, and many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. Here during Military Appreciation Month, stackers, go visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you're going to see all of Navy Federal's Military Appreciation Month offers. So many cool things they're doing for veterans. You'll also see all their other awesome 24/7, 12 months of the year offers. That's NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.